part of the conversation. Send us a WhatsApp message on +27 73 470 3520 or call us at +27 12 001 7679. Let your voice be heard. Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media. From broadcast to baptism.
Well, good evening, and good evening to you. Welcome to the Thursday edition of Business Sense right here on Adventist World Radio. We are powered by SID Media. Every single Thursday, we do this really incredible segment, which is called a Shapeshifter. And this is where we bring you some of the leading minds, leading people, leading academics across the African continent as they tell us a little bit about themselves, who they are, where they were born, and more importantly, how did they get to be where they are? And it's a growing segment, and it's growing really nicely. And it's thanks to you, our listeners. And I'm really excited when we have this type of conversation. So thank you so much. If you want to join us, +27 73 470 3520. That is the number that you can use to talk to us and let us in. Maybe you know our shapeshifter. Maybe you've interacted with him, right? And so you want to tell us a little bit of a story about him, you can do that on +27 73 470 3520. My shapeshifter this evening is Elder Siyabonga Ntombela, an experienced professional engineer and project manager with experience in the petrochemical industry, infrastructure development, power generation, as well as mining, amongst others. And he's joining us this evening to talk to us a little bit about himself and what he does. He's joining us on the line. Good evening, my elder, and welcome to the show.
Good evening, good evening. Thank you so much for this opportunity and the invite.
Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate you. How's the year so far?
The year has been quite hectic. At least we're now rounding down. It's chilling a bit, but I've survived through.
You've survived through, right? Are you ready for end of the year?
Most definitely. Yeah. I'm very much ready to chill and relax.
I love the chilling part because, we've toiled through the rest of the year and it's now time to just finish strong, I suppose, for this year as well. Any fatigue on your side?
Yes. I've had a bit of, a lot of taxing physically in the work that I do. So, physically, I am quite tired.
Yes. And can't wait to end the year. Okay, really appreciate you. And thanks for your time. We do this segment particularly for young people as well, to show them that indeed it is possible, right? With the right attitude, with God on your side, with your dreams and pursuing your dreams, that's really also quite important, and you can do that. And so we bring people like yourselves to this conversation to tell us a little bit about who you are, where you come from, and maybe how did you get to where you are, and we really appreciate your time, as I mentioned there. So I want us to then go back a little bit. A strange question. Maybe you get asked this question quite a lot of the time, but who is Siyabonga Ntombela?
Siyabonga Ntombela is a young guy, a Zulu guy. And some people even jokingly associate me with taxi drivers because I'm from KZN.
Okay.
So, at work sometimes they will call me taxi driver, because of that Zulu part of me. So, I am from Durban.
Yeah.
I grew up in Durban. So
yeah.
I am out of this province. So, I'm an immigrant in a way.
Yes.
But I have been around Gauteng for many, many years now. Yeah. I'm established here with my family.
Okay. Fantastic. And whereabouts in KZN are you from?
A very notorious township.
Okay.
Called KwaMashu.
Okay.
And I'm sure everyone, when you associate KwaMashu with, there is always that frowning and says, okay.
Mm.
Yeah, and I grew up there, in the 80s, 90s.
Yeah.
It was quite hectic.
Yeah.
All the bad things that are known about the township are really real. And I always thank God for being able not to be swallowed
Sure.
to that environment and
Yeah.
able to go above it and be where I am right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, lovely. Let's talk about that environment then. Are you able to paint a picture? I mean, we've got listeners from other parts of the world and might not necessarily understand what that might look like. Can you paint a picture of us, what that actually looked like? Was it a township, like you mentioned, or was it an area that was faced with what sort of socioeconomic challenges that you can remember from your childhood?
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite a very, one would say, traumatic, because we lived at a time where there was a lot of instabilities. There was quite a lot of fights, and what was depressing the most is that most of these fights were amongst black people.
Amongst
So
black people,
during the late 80s or so, you know, when I was going to school, you know, you will either in a given day, you know, either be woken up by a gunshot, or in the afternoon, hear a gunshot. So the day never went by without having had a gunshot. And in most cases, you know, the gunshot will normally be followed by a loud cry, you know, that okay, someone, you know, has been shot, someone has died, and all those things. So it was quite traumatic. I didn't realize it back then. Now I'm talking from hindsight to say, you know, for someone who might not really expected such a life, where, you know, at any given point in time, a gunshot is part of your life.
Sure.
But I grew up in that kind of environment, and unfortunately, or I would say fortunate, because I was somehow, I can't even explain it right now, shielded from all that havoc that was happening at the time, because there were a lot of people that I grew up with that ended up being part of these groupings that are taking each other and stealing cars, doing all kinds of criminal activities. And at that time, I was not even a Christian. So I was still young, being in a township. Living a life that, you know, we don't know where it's going to go. The people that were revered at the time, obviously, it was teachers and policemen. So there was not really much more than that. In fact, my mother was sort of looking at me and says, I will be probably an administrator, you know. Well, in Zulu, we'll call it umabhalane, you know, an administrator. Because that was just the limitation of the view of what life will be. If you're saying someone has achieved, it will someone that has a job in a decent environment. If it's not the teaching or policing, it will be in some kind of an establishment that you work in. So I grew up in that kind of environment, fortunately, you know, gifted with my mind, I was able to, you know, go through schooling, you know, achieving good results. And a lot of people, you know, sort of saw in me a potential to go further with all the mind that I was gifted with. But I didn't realize it. And it's one of the things I've come to also appreciate now, that there are a lot of young people that do not really have an appreciation of the gifted mind that they have. There are a lot of kids that are good at school, achieving good marks, but they take it very for granted, because to them, you know, when I sit now and look at myself, I didn't see any special type of, you know, me. It was just me doing what needs to be done at the time, and it was not difficult for me to grasp a lot of concepts. So it was not something that I needed to cherish and grow on it. You know, but fortunately, I was somehow, you know, I can't explain it, but shielded. Because a lot of people, you know, at my age at the time, that were also good at their schoolwork, but they were swallowed in the environment, and they never went far.
Yeah,
you know. So that was kind of environment where there was not really any you know, significant inspiration that one draws from the environment that they are in.
So would you say your parents played a role in shielding you from either one getting involved, but also as you were exposed to these things, perhaps they could have drawn you in or lured you, as it were?
I will say so. Maybe the other part that I didn't mention as well was that I grew up not with my parents. I was with my grandmother.
Okay.
So we were in that kind of environment.
Okay.
My mother and my father were around, but we were not staying with them.
Yes.
And they were not together.
Yes.
My mother would come home every now and then. So mostly for me, the person that I would say shielded me was my grandmother.
Your grandmother.
In fact, at the time, she also told me that I would be a pastor.
Yes. Okay.
At that age, because at that time, you know, because of you know the gift that I had on grasping things, I would read the Bible and just you know share
sure.
with her.
Sure.
And I would have discussed with it. So that was the only person that was really. With me and even in the society they sort of you know gave me some you know nicknames because of my association
yes.
with my grandmother, which I had fond of her so much. So that's the person that I would say primarily shielded me. But my parents also played their part. They were there, you know, at any given point in time. You know, so, but mostly primarily was my grandmother.
Grandmother, right? We almost, you know, had a past on Dombela, as it were, you know. You could have been saying Pastor
almost.
So you talk about hindsight there. If you look at your life and now in hindsight and where you are today, would you say all of that you went through as a young, you know, Siyabonga, has contributed to who you are today, both as a man, you know, career, maybe a father as well, and all those? So would you say it has contributed to that?
Most certainly. I believe that everything that happens to one's life, I firmly believe it's for a purpose. There are certain things that we'll always want to achieve, but we find ourselves not able to have them.
Yeah.
And for me, I see that as an opportunity to say, I was not ready for it. I might have messed it up if I caught it at that time.
Mm.
So I strongly believe that even with my disadvantaged background, it was for my goodness,
yes.
You know, to sort of in a way be humbled, because I have humble beginnings where I don't have any support structure that I can fall back on. You know, even right now when I would tell my wife to say, look, you know, one of my challenges is that, you know, I'm quite conservative in how I actually even with my money spend my money.
Yeah,
because if I run out of money, I don't have a fallback plan.
Yeah.
I'm the only plan that I have, you know. So I make sure that I'm able to sustain myself. And I think it is because of my background where sort of the background taught me to be able to be self-sufficient and able to do things and not rely on other people so much and able to, you know, not give up.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things sort of carried me, especially at tertiary, that, look, we were even joking with my friends, especially during exams where things were quite tough.
Yeah.
To say, look, guys, this is not the only way to be successful or achieve wealth in life. There are other ways, and you can decide which way you want. But to us, this was the safest way to go through education in order to be successful in life.
Yes.
The other ways are quite high risk, and some people can venture into them and successful. And there are also other ways which are more, you know, on the wrong side of things, you know, you know, being a criminal and all those things. You can go through that whole process and achieve certain things, but it's quite risky, excessively. That it can even end your life. So it sort of gave me to say, look, this is my part that I've chosen. you know, in life to achieve. And I don't think I'm suitable for the rest of the other options, and this is the only way for me to achieve. And I don't have any fallback loan, so I need to study and pass through and achieve this qualification, because this is my only option that I have at the time.
Lovely. And I want to then go back to your schooling years, your formative years, right? Grade 1 to 12, as they call it nowadays. I know back then it was standard 1, standard 1, what, and all those sort of stuff. But what did you grow up wanting to be? I know you eventually studied mechanical engineering, and I'll come back to that one. But during those formative years, you mentioned something really important where you said, you know, obviously the environment was confined in terms of what the art of the possible was in terms of careers out there, right? Your conventional nursing, policing, lawyer, doctor, those were things that, you know, black people back then were exposed to, but not necessarily your engineering and everything. What was engineering what you always wanted to do, or you had a particular career growing up?
No, to be honest with you, I never had a specific career that I wanted to venture into.
Okay.
I would say I accidentally, you know, fell onto engineering. I will explain as well later on, you know, to explain how it ended up to that point.
Yeah.
But as I grew up, I never really had a specific career that I would say that was my first choice of what I want to do in life. You know, at primary, don't think about those things. At the time, we had lower primary, higher primary.
Yeah.
And then at secondary school, that's when now certain people will talk and says, no, maybe you must be a doctor. No, maybe you must do this. You must do that. You know, the teachers at school will tell me to say, no, I never did accounting, but because I was good at maths, they would say, no, you can even do accounting and so forth. And that was at the time, I was not even sure what are all these things and how to go about, you know. We were not even exposed to what is university exactly is, you know. So so the environment was not really, you know, sort of, you know, guided us into what you can achieve in life. We were just in school to study and pass, you know.
Okay. How did you then stumble into mechanical engineering?
It's an interesting story because at the township, even I think right now, you will always have a neighbor that fixes cars.
Yeah,
you know, so I had a neighbor and I would sit with him.
Okay,
you know, I was still young at the time. Just look at him, what he does, and then over time he will invite me to help him and be his second hand to things that he does, and I got very interested in cars, fixing cars, mainly engines and all those things, you know, to a point where, you know, I will be able to help him, you know, assemble, disassemble the whole engine into pieces, assemble it piece by piece, and put it on the ground and start the car without putting inside the vehicle itself, but start the engine outside of the car.
Yeah.
It was quite fascinating
it
for
is.
Me, you
it
know.
Is.
So because of that exposure, I said, look, at least I have some kind of, you know, idea of engineering. I didn't know what it one entails to be able to do such a thing as fixing cars. So I just said, look, mechanical, maybe it's something that I can do.
Yeah.
And then to decide, because I didn't know there was a difference between, you know, an university engineering and then there was a technical one at the time. And then I just, and I was given those information to see what engineering requirements at university, engineering requirements at the technical. So I looked at both and then I said, okay, I see, I do qualify for the one at university. Let me go for that one, you know, at university. And then, fortunately, I was accepted, but I got a shock of my life. It says what I thought I was going to study as mechanical engineering is not really about cars.
Okay.
To tell the truth. It's totally different. It covers quite a number of things. Cars, a car in itself, it's not even a module in the study.
Yo.
But you talk about what the inside of the engine does, what is called thermodynamics,
yes,
to understand how the pressure, the fire happening in the car, how do you balance it and make sure that it runs and all those things. And many other aspects of understanding how to design a pump. You know, right now we have water all over our houses, but how does that water get into our houses is what you call a pump. And we went through designing a pump to have an impeller and a cage, casing of the impeller to say how to size the pump to be able to pump water from Kempton Park to Tembisa. You know, it's different size of pumps, and you need to size them in such a way. And what type of material that you can select to be able to operate, because how you select the material for a different operation, there are certain areas where it's too hot and certain material are not able to operate in that space, and in certain areas where there it's too cold and all those kinds of things. And also dealing with chemicals to say, in terms of chemicals, how do we understand the chemical reactions that happen? The chemistry that you did in physics, all those kinds of things. So it was quite a very interesting and, you know, fortunately, it didn't scare me enough to run away from it. I hold on to it, even though it was difficult, but I chose to stay. And fortunately, with the group that I end up with, it was quite very important for one to be able to survive in the in a very difficult environment, like a tertiary environment. You need a very good support structure of friends that will help you, because, you know, you won't know everything. And, and if you have a proper structure, there will be someone that will know something that you might not know. And now you'll also share with what you know and all those things. So that's one of the things that made me to survive throughout it. And also the reality of one coming from a township, from a mother that didn't work. My grandmother was a pensioner. And and one of the things that happened for me, unfortunately, was that immediately when I finished my matric, my grandmother passed away. And,
Sorry about that.
I was at the point where she was going to, I was going to, you know, survive off her to support me to, for the studies. But she was not around. And that was one of the reasons why I had a gap year in when I finished my matric. I didn't immediately go to university. So I had a gap year, and then I went the following year. So all those things, and getting into tertiary without knowing exactly when you at the tertiary environment, how to survive that space, you know, financially. How do you make sure that, you know, when you are staying at a residence and all those things. So fortunately, you know, the information that was shared in terms of, no, there is NAFSA that can help you to study and all those things, which really assisted me to be able to study. And I got a bursary on my third year of study. Fortunately, then that makes things much easier for me. And it opened up a lot of avenues for me, because now I was sort of secured a job when I was finished studying, you know. So that also encouraged me to be able to go through and complete my degree.
Indeed. All right, let's shift gears then to your career, right? I know you've worked for Exxaro, for example. You've worked for Eskom in different roles. You've done the Department of Infrastructure Development as well. And I know currently I'm led to believe by my producer that you're at Sasol as well. So if you look at all these careers and companies, great companies that you've worked with, what would you say is your greatest or highest point, and what was then the lesson that you've learned in that?
Okay, that's quite interesting. You did your research quite well. I'm sitting here asking, and nobody asked me about these things, but you know quite a lot. So, and then I realized, okay, there's this thing called LinkedIn. And it's also quite a lot of information.
There's the internet.
So, fortunately, information is still accurate. I try as much as possible to keep it updated.
Okay.
So, throughout my career, really, I've been in the space of engineering. In my career, engineering, project management, maintenance management, and all those kinds of things. So, Exxaro is a mining company.
Yes.
So I was there as an engineer, and Eskom, I was at power station,
Yes.
directed the power station,
Yes.
doing engineering work, at government of infrastructure. Interestingly, most people will have some kind of negative perceptions about
Yes.
government.
Yes.
And that was one of the areas that I actually enjoyed myself
Oh,
quite a
look
lot,
at
because
that.
there was quite a lot of value add that I saw there. A lot of people, miss that opportunity because their perception about government. And I had quite a lot of guys in there to be able to actually even register as professional engineers as well. So yeah, that's quite, one of the things that I always want to emphasize, that within government there's quite a lot of opportunities that are there. The unfortunate reality, though, is the fact that, it depends on a personal drive. If you don't want to drive yourself and able to perform and do things honestly, the government can also be a very relaxed environment where you don't do much.
I
But
see.
the opportunities are there for you to apply yourself and achieve a lot. So yeah, and right now I'm currently with Sasol
Yes.
at Secunda.
Yeah.
So I can say some of my achievements. I am registered with the Engineering Council of South Africa. I'm not sure
Yes.
if a lot of people understand what that is. Engineering Council of South Africa is like a, what do you call this? For the accounting guys,
Yes, yes.
become
Saitama.
CAs.
Yeah.
Yes. So
Saitama.
it's, what is it again?
It's Saika.
Saika, yes.
Yeah.
So it's Saika. It's the exact platform really for engineering, where you get assessed to earn a title called a professional engineer.
Yeah.
So it's not everyone that has an engineering degree that is a professional engineer.
Yeah. Yeah.
So based on the engineering work, which mainly they look at your engineering application in terms of designing equipment, and how you manage resources, and how do you actually even incorporate with environmental compliance, because engineering is not just engineering, it's engineering to ensure that society is safe and the environment is protected. So I you have to write a report and submit that report to the council. The council will evaluate, and if they see it's good enough, they will invite you for an interview just to confirm and check that. Because in South Africa, unfortunately, there's quite a lot of criminals out there that people don't write their report, and they get caught when they are asked that they said they did, but they actually didn't do. So that's what I have achieved. So I went in and I passed it, and right now I'm also now, supporting that institution, Engineering Council of South Africa. So Engineering Council of South Africa is essentially responsible for the engineering fraternity from at the tertiary level, meaning that they are the ones that accredit engineering qualification.
Okay.
Using the world standard to say that if anyone in South Africa studied engineering at a tertiary institution that is accredited by EXA, you can go anywhere in the world that engineering, that qualification of yours will be recognized.
Ooh, lovely.
Because it has been assessed
lovely.
To be at a world standard as well.
Yes.
So they will call us, people who are registered like me to come and assess all engineering programs.
Yes.
And I've gone to UKZN, I've gone to Nelson Mandela Bay University, I've gone to TUT to assess their qualification and check whether they are of the standard that is set up. So I do a lot of those as well. I'm also an external moderator at University of Johannesburg for final year students and their reports. So they will invite me every now and then to come and assist them to evaluate, because it's one of the requirements for an engineering program that especially their design report must be externally moderated by people who are professionally registered to ensure that the work and that they do is of the level that is required. So I do quite a lot of that. So I've done quite a
Quite
lot
a
here.
bit, quite a bit, right? And any one challenge so far that you can think about in your career, and how did you navigate that challenge?
Yeah, so there's quite a lot of challenges, especially within the engineering fraternity.
Yes.
And the unfortunate reality is that it is a profession that has not really, transformed. It is still a profession that is quite dominated by people that were previously advantaged, even right now. It's one thing that it got me a bit of a shock. I grew up in a township. The only time I was in the multiracial environment was at tertiary level. And there was quite a lot of balance and so forth. But when you get to the work environment, it is quite a totally different environment where you see a lot of white people around you. And you end up at some point, being the only black person in a room of a meeting. And for me, it always depresses me when I find myself in that kind of environment. Even right now, it's still exactly the same. And I have been in this career now for about 18 years. And not much has changed from the time I
Eish,
started and
eish,
now. And
eish.
it's really unfortunate. And it seems to be an institutional type of a system. And in a very strategic way, a lot of black people don't really survive in that space. And you'll find a lot of white people. It's one of the things that it really depresses me every now and then when I find myself this reality keeps in, happening before me, where you see this, fraternity has not really transformed and so forth. So, and also if you look at Engineering Council of South African report and look at how many people, when you look at the demographics of people who are professionally registered, it also tells you the same story there that, especially for professional engineers, because they have different categories. You have professional engineers, those people who have a degree, and then you have technologists that went to University of Technology and then technician. Black people are more, dominated in technician level and some in technology level, but at engineers level, professional engineers, we don't find a lot
A
of black
lot,
people in that space. And I just hope that people, especially young kids that have grown up, especially in the township and whoever is listening as well, that they don't give up on this thing, because I think one of the problem is that we end up giving up to occupy that space and nothing changes if we do that. So it's one of the areas that we still need to fill in and close that gap. And somehow, it's not going away. It's quite depressing. I'm quite far from my retirement. I have probably almost 20 years to my retirement, but I feel like I'm running out of time to make much of a meaningful difference into that space. And I can only right now encourage more and more people to get into engineering and specifically go for the degree at the university, a BSc or BEng. That's what is mostly lagging within, the black people.
Oh, lovely, lovely. I want us to go here, even though we're running out of time. I want us now to get into your money. And that is a key component of this particular show in any case. So we would never end this conversation without talking about money. I want to ask then, what is your relationship with money? How would you characterize it? Toxic, good, growing, we're getting there. We are good, we're doing very well this side of the world. How would you define it?
I think it's a journey, man. It's a journey that one embarks on. And through the lessons that I have gone through, has made me to, grow even further. And one of the things that I realized myself was that when I started working, immediately I bought a car. So in other words, the money that I was earning, I could not really fully, enjoy it, because now I went into a debt. And then when I got a promotion, I bought a house. So my debt increased. So
Yeah.
I never really had an opportunity to enjoy, especially at the earlier age
Younger age,
of
yeah.
the growth that I gained as I
Yes.
grow into my career.
Yes.
And then when I changed jobs and moved to Eskom, for an example, I got married, and it comes with its own responsibility.
Yes,
So
definitely.
every time I made some kind of changes, and then I started having kids
Yeah.
thereafter and those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So in terms of responsibilities, that's one of the things that, if I can advise, those that are upcoming in relation to how they manage their growth financially, is that your debt needs to lag your growth,
Yeah.
so that
Yeah.
you have that gap of managing any emergencies.
Yes.
Because if you immediately just increase your debt because you are now growing
Yeah,
financially,
yeah.
you are not going to get anywhere, because you'll
No,
be
you're
working
not.
for your debt. You're
No,
not going
you're
to work for
not.
yourself to grow yourself and increase your wealth,
Yeah.
So for me, that's one of the key lessons that I've learned in terms of how I manage my money. And
Yeah.
another one was the issue of the credit card.
Yes.
And even right now, if anyone comes to me and says, "No, here's a card that you can come here and buy, and then you pay later," I run away, because that thing captured me so much that I struggled so much to get out of it.
Sure,
Even when I
sure.
tried to pay for this thing, it was not going away. I could not
Sure,
understand it.
sure.
And right now I fear a credit card.
Yeah,
I don't
yeah.
want to associate myself with a credit card, because it
Yeah.
consumed you easily, because you always think I have money.
Yeah,
Nah.
yeah.
There are people, I won't lie, there are people who probably are good at how to manage their credit card, which
Yes,
is fine.
which is
And one
fine.
needs to understand themselves that
Yeah.
there are things that may seem good and easy to other people, but you are not. And for me, a credit card is one, including having an account at clothing stores. That's one thing that I never want to enter into. When you pay for a cloth that has already been torn, you can't even wear it, but you're
Eish,
still paying for them
eish,
and all those kind of. So
eish.
those are things that, from how I manage my money, I run away from, to make sure
Yeah.
that I don't get trapped into it.
Yeah. Okay, lovely, lovely. Okay, now if you, we're drawing to a close now, if you were given the opportunity to look at the young Siyabonga, right, and give him advice, what would you say to him? And I suppose now that you've experienced life and you are where you are, what would you say to the young Siyabonga?
Look, I think one of probably things that might have held me back to achieve as much, I won't say it's even negative, but I will encourage myself to say, the more you are focused on what you want to achieve in life and be disciplined to it, you will achieve it. And one of the things that, I went through my career, especially studying and also early career, under the fear of, I don't want to fail. I don't want to fail. I don't want to fail. And that sort of limits me to venture into risky things that, in life, more risk, more reward. I never want to get into them, because I was always fearful of losing. And probably what I would tell myself was that, look, you need to be able to calculate the risks that you want to take, not just to run away from the risk.
Yes,
And
yes.
life is all about risk. The moment there's no risk in life, life ceases to be
Yeah.
life, because
Ooh.
life is unpredictable.
Ooh, yeah.
So there's always, you always wake up and drive. That's a risk in itself. So every decision that you take, it is what life is. It's unknown, but you are hoping that you will achieve something. So in general, to build from the normal way of life, sometimes you don't realize that we are taking risk at every time
At
we wake
every
up on the
time,
day.
yeah.
So you need, as a person, able to have that, opportunity to take risk and enjoy life as well, and make sure that your background is not you know, dragging you and draining you because you are scared of getting back to that life. So even though, yes, you must not go back to that life, but you should not limit yourself in taking, you know, opportunities that come before you because you're scared that you might go back to your old life. So I think that's one, that's some of the advices that I would give to myself onto that. And I sometimes do it to my kids, that I allow them to take a risk. My wife will tell me, she says, but why these kids are going to get injured and all those things. Says, but that's part of life. You know, they will learn.
And in 10 seconds or so, if you were to do something differently now, right, with that hindsight, with that what you just said, and I love the part where you say, just enjoy life, and it's really important to really enjoy life. And I think as Christians, we often shy away from the word enjoy life when we actually need to do that, right, because we are not created to be stereotypical in our approach to life. Yes, we are Christians, we should live a Christian life, but doesn't mean it has to be unenjoyable. That's not what life is, right? But what would you do differently? Would you still travel the same path?
Like I said before, is that things that happen in my life, I believe that were for a reason. And I like to believe that if I went a different path, I might not really be able to handle the challenges that came in that path. I would say, especially at a formative age and all that, to say I will keep that intact. But probably when I get to my career, when I start my career, that's when probably I would have pushed myself a bit further, because I was now at a space where I am able to stand by myself and need to take certain risk and all those things. And enjoy life. Christ says, you know, he came to give us life and have life in abundance. And that in itself means that you need to be able to be a person that is able to see life. Not life that you see every day. You woke up and see. That's just a part of life. You need to go out there. You know, my wife would sometimes try to push me, because the thing is still holding me back of being cautious about what to spend or not to spend and go out. She says, no, let's just go to another country and all kinds of things and stuff like that. We need to be able to create that space for ourselves to be able to go out there and see what God has created. And that's what Christianity is all about. It is able to enjoy what life, what God has given us. God has not given us to be, for example, I'm in Kempton Park. To say his life is in Kempton Park. No, you know, life is outside. It's the whole world, you know, and we need to have that opportunity to enjoy life. And sometimes it helps you to even have an appreciation of what you have. And sometimes we don't have that because we don't go out of the space that we're in and we don't appreciate what God has done for us. So I would really, really emphasize that point of ensuring that we go out there and experience what God has given us.
Okay. And how would you round it up then to young people that look up to you, to others in the field that also look up to you as well? What would be your final words of encouragement as we close on this?
I would say, you know, in each and every one of us, God has given us a purpose. And we need to have that relationship with God so that we can have that purpose realized. And the moment you are having that relationship with God, that purpose will be realized in you. And you need to pursue it. You need to pursue it without fail. So I would really encourage that, you know, parents allow the kids, their kids to explore. Obviously with a guided approach to it. To ensure that they are not, their worldview is not limited in their immediate space. And help them to, you know, take risk. The other time, you know, my wife was quite concerned about it when my firstborn turned 12. And at that time, it meant that he can be able to fly by himself to Durban. You know, he has never done that before. But, you know, I encourage you to say, let's allow him to venture into this thing by himself. And then he goes, get to the airport. Our time was quite huge. And he says, just follow the signs, you'll get there. You know, and allow your kids to explore. They will make mistakes. Obviously, as a parent, you need to have always some backup plan just to support them so that they don't fall hard when they fall. You know, to go out there and get to the other side of life. You know, so life is all about allowing that space of freedom, because as Christians, we need to have that freedom of able to venture into everything, you know, and not confine ourselves so much that we become so boring, irrelevant to the life of this world.
Yeah. Oh, lovely. That's beautiful, beautiful advice. Well, my elder, thank you so much for your time this evening and just giving us a piece of that. I think it's advices that I've written for myself here. And we really appreciate you. I know that we'll reconnect with you some other time. But thank you so much for joining us this evening. I've taken those insights and advices for myself.
Thank you so much for the invite. I've never really done.
No, you did very well.
Biography on myself before, so in terms of and emphasizing the key points that I wanted
yes.
to make. I hope that.
No, you did.
They did make the point clear.
Fantastically, you know? Well. You did fantastically well. That's what I'm saying. We're going to connect with you because I can sense we are not done. There's still a lot more that we can unearth from your insights and your knowledge and experience. So I'm pretty sure we're going to, come in contact with you and we'd really appreciate if you still open the door to us.
No, not a problem. Not a problem. Yeah. I might have given a bit of a run around because I was very uncomfortable.
No, it was beautiful. That's beautiful. Yeah.
So I will make myself available. You know, sometimes there can be some challenges
yes.
with my work environment.
Yeah.
So I will let you know when I'm available. But yes, I will avail myself when the situation allows.
Thank you so much, my elder, and may God bless you.
Thank you so much. May God bless you too.
Thank you so much. That was our elder there, Elder Siyabonga Ntombela.
Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.